Podcast brought to you this morning by First Baptist Church and also by Tall Grass Motors. Opportunity for me to speak a little politics this morning with candidate for the 1st Congressional District seat, Andy Coleman. First of all, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Well, good morning, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
And you and I have spoken before, and just reminding the voters, I think, that yes, the election is not until November of next year unless something were to happen, such as Congressman Bridenstine, as far as I know, is still in consideration for a NASA seat, so
the
seat could become early.
Yeah, and I just point out that we're actually looking at next summer, because that's when the primary is going to be, so
right.
That's the first big thing on the calendar.
And certainly it's never too early to get anyone's name out there, particularly if you were a longtime politician, maybe already having served in state government or even county or city government, so at least some people would know your name. And when you're trying to establish a name, it's good to be out there early.
Right, and of course that's not the case with me. I've been working pretty quietly in the Middle East, helping the persecuted church over there. So the time that I have to introduce myself and let people get a sense of who we are and what we're standing for is very helpful.
And of course, that's nearly a 180 degree reversal. Voice of the Martyrs in general goes along its business. It publicizes the mission, but not necessarily the people involved.
Yep, that's right. So that's, in fact, we're intentionally behind the scenes. We are not the story. So you're absolutely right. We're trying to focus on what the persecuted church is going through and also what they're accomplishing and overcoming. So we're the backstory.
Yeah, well, so with another, again, reason, you and I have spoken, I'm not sure, three or four times before, but you come from a background of service,
right.
Military service, in this case, to the persecuted church, and that's probably a good place to start the conversation.
Well, yeah, I think that if you look at my background, I really have spent my lifetime in service of one form or another. I graduated from the Air Force Academy about 15 years ago, and went on to become a military intelligence officer in the Middle East, served with the Air Force on active duty, later as a reservist, deployed with the Army into West Baghdad and throughout the country of Iraq. Even when I was in law school, I was taking opportunities to serve in different capacities there, was in private practice for a season, but for the last 6 years, working in the Middle East with Voice of the Martyrs here in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Serving in some pretty ugly settings, and some people say, well, if you're looking at Washington, D.C., that might be just as ugly, so they may be right.
Up until recently, I'm not sure it's been a combat zone, but...
Yeah, where's the vests? We need vests.
Well, and you know, I have heard some interesting comments. Why don't the elected officials all have security? And
yeah.
Security, as I look at it, is kind of that layer around the individual saying, I'm not going to allow complete access to the public because of security. It's what you do. But elected officials in the job that you're seeking, you're asking for access. You want people to come up and shake your hand when they see you at, I don't care, the grocery store or whatever, because you need to be accessible.
Absolutely. You're spot on. And, you know, it's true. I think just the rhetoric has hit such a fever pitch that things have really kind of spiraled out of control. I knew a year or two ago that we were really in dire straits as a country, and it seems to have only worsened. It's really tragic what did happen last week out on the baseball field, and all that's playing out. So I just hope that civility can regain a foothold, because yes, your representatives, those that are in these positions, need to be accessible. We have to be accessible. We can't put a buffer between us and the communities we represent, and we won't. So, for example, if we're elected, my family stays right here. We're not moving to D.C. Why? Because we want to be as accessible as possible. We want to feel what our communities are feeling and be a part of that life.
Well, and it's one of those jobs that you want to be connected back home, be connected back to the district. And there are several elected officials from the state that, whenever possible, they work hard to try to get back for the weekend. And they're spending X number of hours on air travel, you know, on Friday, and then do it again on Monday just to be back on the job, so to speak. But you have to say it's good to be connected with what's going on in the district.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's one of the ways that you increase your effectiveness as a representative, is just by being there, being amongst the families here, and hearing from them consistently, not just, you know, here and there, but really to be among them very consistently.
You mentioned your family, and also that you would keep your family here. I don't like to make the family part of the campaign, but you are. They are the environment you live in.
Absolutely.
And so to a certain extent, it's nice to at least get a snapshot of that family picture.
Yeah, and I'm, a lot of the people around the district have had the opportunity to meet my wife, Liz, which is
I think
is
she was out
treat.
At Sunfest, wasn't she?
She was at Sunfest, so a lot of people got to meet her there. They've met her at a variety of different events, but a lot of people have encouraged me that if I can't make an event, just send her. they would be just as happy, if not happier. But no, you're right. The family is part of it. We just celebrated Father's Day, and families are important to me. The role of parents is important to me, and strong families make strong communities. So that's something that we represent. That's something that we stand for. So I am excited that people can meet them. And just see how blessed I am.
Well, and certainly not that anybody would expect you to phone home on every vote, but when you're home on the weekend, the conversation of what is coming up a vote or maybe you just recently voted on could be part of the conversation around the table.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. So, you're on.
That is. We talked about your service to the military, and I think it's interesting that for someone with former, in this case, Air Force, but again, military experience, replacing a candidate who has been very upfront as far as his military service. It may not be anything other than interesting, but
well, here's the thing that I think is important. I think that when we look at the candidates that are going to be in this race, I think they're going to be largely in agreement on a number of issues. There's going to be a lot of commonalities.
I think Republicans in general, at least around here, are going to be varying shades of red. Yeah.
Yep. So, for example, I'm very pro-life. I'm a constitutional conservative. So things like our First Amendment rights, our Second Amendment rights, are near and dear to my heart, and I think they're going to be to others. But I think that the most critical distinctions is on the foreign policy front, and I think that's critical at the federal level, where security and economic issues play a paramount role in that responsibility for the federal government. And I'm really the only one that's going to have foreign policy experience, national security experience, or service of that nature in the military. And I just think that's profoundly important to have a background in that, to be familiar with that. 40 years ago, I think we, in those seats, of the 535 seats in both chambers, something around 60% of those individuals had some kind of international experience, some kind of military experience. And now, I'm not sure what the exact number is, but I think the total is between 90 and 100 of those 535 seats, and only maybe 30 some of those actually have gone forward and spent time overseas in these roles. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, there's fewer and fewer voices speaking into these situations at a time when I think the world is spiraling more and more in a frenzied direction. So the opportunity to be a thoughtful, experienced voice in that, I think, is very, very important, not just for the families of Oklahoma's 1st District, but for the United States of America.
Well, I'll draw the correlation when I speak with Senator Inhofe, and of course that those committees are part of his career of service in the Senate, but nonetheless, he does at least speak of the fact that he is one of the, again, minority of senators who have served. Mm-hmm. And so it informs, I think, who a representative or senator is and what issues they will find interest in voting their conscience on.
Yeah, there's that, and there's just also the complexities at play. These are complex issues. There's a lot of variables, and I just think it takes some familiarity, some experience working in that setting to be as thoughtful as possible. So,
okay. We're talking with candidate for the 1st Congressional District, Andy Coleman, and we will continue on 1400 K1 in just a moment.
Bartlesville First Baptist Church's focus on the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ. As we learn the God's Word, love God's people, and live God's mission, this vision will continue to thrive until He comes. We are committed to vibrant worship, relevant Bible teaching, genuine community, and the urgent spreading of this gospel. We are resolved. We will not be silent. Come worship with us at First Baptist Church, 405 South Cherokee in Bartlesville. Services are 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. each Sunday.
Is it time to start thinking about a new car? But the thought of dealing with the large dealerships is just too intimidating, too confusing? There is an easier way. Tallgrass Motors. Tallgrass Motors doesn't play all the confusing games the large dealerships play. Tallgrass Motors has continually been voted Bartlesville's best used car dealer year after year. Go by Tallgrass Motors today and enjoy looking at over 60 used cars, trucks, and SUVs, all priced to save you money. Tallgrass Motors, Highway 75 North in Bartlesville.
Continuing our time this morning with a candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, Andy Coleman. Again, Congressman Bridenstine, self-limited. He said early on that if elected, he would only run for 3 terms, and he's fulfilling that promise. And that's why you and I are talking this morning.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Other issues that you see, I'll say it's important to bring a constitutional conservative point of view to the Congress. In this case, not additional vote, but replacing what has been a conservative vote in the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's a variety of different issues at play. One of the ones that I've been seeing a lot of is First Amendment rights, especially on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very charged environment, and this is another background that I'm familiar with. When I got off active duty, I went to law school because I was concerned way back then mm-hmm. with where things stood constitutionally, and it was tough. I mean, serving as an officer with the Federalist Society, which is a conservative legal group, or the Christian Legal Society, or the Alliance Defending Freedom, I had to stand my ground in a pretty liberal environment, and that wasn't the most pleasant at times, but that's why I was there. And it's only gotten more difficult as far as your free speech rights, your religious liberty rights. The Constitution is still the Constitution, even if it's on campus. But I've seen that really has spiraled out of control as well.
Well, I'm not the only voice saying that it's interesting that Berkeley, the birth mm-hmm. of the free speech movement, so to speak, back in the 60s, the shouting, or what would have been the shouting, have caused several conservative spokesmen to just cancel or move their appearances.
Well, it's gotten so dark that it's not just shouting. It's torching buildings. It's attacking physically people, and that's playing out on campuses, that's playing out across our country in different communities, and that's where I want to stand up and say that civility has a very important place in our society. We have to be able to disagree in a respectful fashion, stand our ground. We have to stand our ground because we're going to have differences of opinion, and those can be very strong and passionate, but we also have to know that we enjoy these freedoms together and we rise and fall together as a society. So,
As a conservative, constitutional conservative, but I think we can also expand it over to fiscal conservative. Mm-hmm. Your policy that would be on tax issues or certainly the use of government funds, again, informs the type of decisions that you would make.
Yep. So like we were saying, that on the tax front, I think most of us are going to agree that lower tax rates are generally conducive to growth in the economy. I think anything you do has to be done in a thoughtful fashion. That has to be rolled out in a responsible manner so that it can be effective. If there is a lag in the effectiveness of that, well, let's take that into consideration. We don't need to. One of the things I see a lot in our country recently is a roller coaster effect where we'll do huge swings up and then we'll swing way down. Enacting policy or the positions that we take, and I love the idea of the steady hand on the wheel,
mm-hmm.
and so I'd like to be a part of that. But lower taxes and also just being responsible with our spending. A $20 trillion debt parked on the heads of our kids really concerns me. These are our grandkids. These are generations that haven't even been born yet that are going to be having tabs slapped on their foreheads. So I think we have to be responsible in that. Even people that disagree with me on some of the spending things that are more on the Democrat side, I sense that more and more of them are also recognizing that this is a precarious position and it's not sustainable. So I hope that even on that issue that there's common ground to work on getting this back in a responsible position.
Oh, I think even those who say that debt is not as big a bugaboo as some folks try to make it, they understand that the debt has risen enormously over the past decade.
It's a death spiral, really. You know, you've heard that term slapped onto the healthcare debate mm-hmm. on Obamacare, and it's true. But the same, I think, is true of our fiscal position. It is a death spiral, and it may. people might be able to dismiss it for a little bit, but it's going to catch up with us, and it's going to have pretty serious consequences when it does.
Would you say that it partly because it's China that owns a lot of the debt that theoretically they could call in early and cause a fiscal problem for the country?
That's absolutely right, and that's why when I'm talking about this issue, I point out that, yes, this is a moral issue. We really shouldn't be borrowing money against our grandkids, but it's a national security issue, and we expose ourselves to risks and vulnerabilities that we don't need to by putting ourselves in these positions, either at the risk of a financial collapse because of where we stand, or, like you said, countries that we are beholden to start insisting on terms that don't necessarily agree with us, but that we have to toe the line just to keep things afloat. That's a spot that I don't think we want to be in. I think that's a spot we have to get ourselves out of.
And is there a course that Andy would recommend as far as getting ourselves out of that situation?
Well, I think there's an enormous problem with our spending. I think there's an enormous problem with our spending. A lot of the programs that we review, is this something that the federal government should really be spending our tax dollars on? Or is this something that's better left to the private market? If we can find that service provided in the Yellow Pages, that might be a good indication that the federal government shouldn't be doing it. And if that's the case, even if the programs that we're talking about are relatively small, it's the same as if we were going through a family budget. Yeah, the Starbucks coffee you might be getting, that might be a small part of your overall budget, but taken over many years, it adds up significantly. And all of that, I think, has to be looked at responsibly to really get our house in order.
So would it be unreasonable to say that you would move toward, whether it's actually getting introduced or not, but move toward a balanced budget situation?
Absolutely. I think that is the responsible position to be in. And again, some people get concerned because they think of draconian cuts, massive cuts, and all this to achieve that. Again, like I said before, I think you can roll these things out in a responsible fashion to avoid the roller coaster effect, if at all possible, but that we do have to start implementing things with teeth to achieve that balance. I think that's the only sustainable solution that we're going to arrive at.
So you're just throwing it back, worded differently, you're saying something to the effect of, we didn't get ourselves in this debt situation overnight. You're not going to solve it in 8 years, but if you don't start chewing it now, you're never going to get the thing eaten.
Absolutely. For me, coming out of an intelligence background, a lot of times what I'm looking at are trend lines. Mm-hmm. And if the trend lines are still going into outer space, I'm very, very nervous. But if we can turn those trend lines around where they're coming back to sensible, sane levels, then at least we're on the right direction. We're on that course to achieving what we need to achieve. But right now, I'm concerned.
You know, from a foreign affairs point, as you look at Asia, as you look at Korea particularly, if you look at China particularly, not even leading the rest of Asia alone, just those two countries, then you look at the Middle East, there are all kinds of situations that could conceivably cause this country problems.
Absolutely. And that's where my position is. We're going to face challenges. It's a given. We as a country will face challenges in this world. But anything that we can do to limit the amount of challenges that we have to face is a good thing. So if we can get our economy back in a sensible direction and instead focus our attentions and our energy on these issues that are emerging in Asia or the Middle East or, cross-national terrorism, that's only going to be helpful to us.
I saw an article over the past week from the Secretary of Air Force, and I don't remember the numbers involved, but again, the Secretary was commenting that manning levels are critically low. We need pilots, we need all the other maintenance people for the support crews, and in general, mannings, they were commenting on the Air Force, but I think in general, defense manning levels are extremely low right now.
Yeah, I think that was Heather Wilson, who was herself an Air Force Academy graduate. Mm-hmm. She was a congresswoman, I believe, out of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. But she was pointing out these numbers, and I think that's not just an Air Force issue. That's Army. That's going to be Marines. That's going to be Navy. And it's true. I think that we are just in a difficult spot. We have chewed through our military pretty solidly over the last 15 years, and I do think that we have to be intentional on structuring it well, revitalizing it well, and getting it back into a healthy position, where they're able to respond as needed, because we do have tall expectations of our military, and we want them to be equipped and ready to go.
With repeal and replace, and the House has already passed a bill, it's more or less in the Senate's ballpark now, but again, moving toward that, you have to, if I hear you say correctly, look at not only the implications to the healthcare system, but also to the country's budget.
Yep, we have to take that into account. I think that's a responsible position to take as stewards of our national economy. And I'm honestly a little frustrated as it's stalled and we haven't seen any movement that I can perceive. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping that we can present something that we can move on.
Well, we're not going to cover the rest of it, but I do want to send people to your website.
That'd be great. Yeah, my website's very simple. It's just my name, andycoleman.org. That's andycoleman.org.
And again, I know you had the opportunity at Sunfest to shake a few hands and get that touched face-to-face impression with folks. Mm-hmm. Anything else that we can talk about coming up in the next, let's say, couple of months this summer that you'll be around at festivals or other things?
I think people are going to have a very good chance of meeting me or the family in the next few weeks, especially as we come up on July 4th and all of that. So there's just a range of events to participate in, but keep an eye open for us, and we'd love to introduce ourselves if you see us.
Okay. So again, thank you very much for coming in this morning. I've had the opportunity to speak this morning with candidate for the 1st District Congressional seat, Andy Coleman. He is running for the seat, again being vacated by Congressman Bridenstine. As far as we know, he served through the November election, but again, could conceivably make that shift earlier if something were to happen with a NASA seat. Again, andycoleman.org.
That's right.
On the website. So again, check that out and look for his name, look for his face when maybe you're headed around at Freedom Fest or some of the other things going on around the area. News on the way next from the Oklahoma News Network on K1.
From the Oklahoma News Network, I'm Sean Carey. The